Hi, and welcome to episode one of Unfiltered. My name's Claire. I'm the host for the series. We're here today thanks to a partnership with Valued Lives and DRN1 Diversity Radio Network. I am joined by the amazing Rita and John and Charlotte. And today we're going to be talking all about some of the myths and the ideas that people have around employment. So I'm going to go straight to you, Rita. Tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Oh, okay. So I was born in New South Wales, in Kingcroft. And when I was 3 years old, I went back to the UK with my mum and my father. And then I decided to resettle in Western Australia, and that was 10 years ago. So I've got a disability. I'm legally blind and deaf. Got a guide dog called Joel. I wear hearing aids. I'm married with two grown-up sons. I'm a grandmother of five grandchildren and a great-grandmother of two great-grandchildren. Which tells you how ancient I am.
I don't think so.
I've worked in the legal profession for 22 years. I've been in private practice and I have been in peninsula law centres. Yeah, I've had a good variety of legal work, particularly with disability rights.
Yep.
That's my passion. And then I'm the Sherpa Valued Lives, and I'm on some other boards and government boards and, yeah, the busy life there.
Sure is. Cool. Thanks, Rita. It is a busy life indeed. I'm going to start with you, Charlotte. Charlotte, tell us a little bit about you.
Yes. I am Charlotte Patterson, and with me, I am a story author for children's stories. I write stories from my own ideas that I get from my inspiration and from my passion, actually. My passion is writing, so I like to do writing of stories or writing or something else to get some ideas. And I'm famously related to Banjo Patterson. He's my great-grandfather's cousin. Who was a famous poet and story writer.
Yeah, awesome. That's really cool. And you do some advocacy work too, don't you? Talk to students and stuff?
Yes, I do talk to students. And I used to do a public speaking course. Last year I did this course, and we just basically learned about what you want to say. What you want to say in your speech, and just do a little introduction about yourself and just learn many other things, and really enjoyed it.
Wow, awesome. Thanks for sharing. And last but by no means least, John, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's John. I'm John Patterson. I'm Charlotte's father. Mm-hmm. So I drive her around places and help her with her business, selling her books at markets and things like that.
Yeah.
Trying to get her to clean up a room occasionally.
How successful is that?
Very proud of her. She's come a long way from a little girl.
Oh, yeah.
Overcome quite a few challenges too.
Yeah.
Epilepsy and things like that. And I'm very proud with the number of challenges she's decided to take on and really stick with it and master those challenges. She's got quite a few milestones behind us. Yeah, very proud of that.
That's cool. Does that make you blush when you hear Dad say that? Yeah, thanks, Dad. All right, so what we're going to do, guys, as part of this conversation is we're going to run through some questions that we've been sent in or people have asked over the past few months since we've decided to put the podcast together. So the first question that we got asked, and weirdly we got asked this one a few times, is it true that people with disability don't want to work? Who wants to answer that one first? Or Dad? Charlotte's just dobbed Dad in, listeners.
I don't believe that for a second. I think I'm currently on long service leave because I'm a primary school teacher by trade, and I'm finding that the long periods of not working are actually quite challenging and a bit boring at times. But I know a few people with disabilities, and they want just as much, just like Charlotte was saying before, they want an income to be able to have some agency in their own lives. So in that regard, they're exactly the same as neurotypical people in inverted commas.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with you there. Yeah, because I think that all people with disabilities want to work, because without employment, you've got no money. Without no money, you've got no housing. Without any housing, you've got no relationship or family. And we all have a moan about going to work, but it's about that self-respect to let Charlotte and go her own business. And that is a fantastic achievement. More and above over what anybody could do. She's publishing a book.
Yeah.
How awesome is that?
Very good.
Nothing unique.
Yeah.
And it gives you some control over your life, doesn't it?
It does.
Because it's at the whim of...
Yeah, and the thing is, people have the attitude that people with disabilities or disabled people don't want to work. No, it's not that we don't want to work. It's because people have got this attitude, will employ people with disabilities, won't put the support in place and the employment workplace or the workplace. We should want... I chance to be an ordinary citizen of Australia. Mm. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't, for the NDIS, don't have funding for employment. There is a little bit there. But hey, people with disabilities or disabled people, if we had that support, just imagine how much we could achieve.
Mm. Absolutely. The question was, people with disability don't want to work. Is that true for you?
From that one, no, I don't think it's true. Because with that, if you at least have enough money and with a little bit of faith, you can try to start from baby steps. And with your inspiration or from your passion of what you want to do in the future, you can try to at least achieve that. And with my business called Cradles World, my main three slogan words is dream, imagine, and create. So with those, if you have those three, including an active imagination, you can try all different sorts of things.
Because Charlotte, I'm just wondering, we've just come from work experience. You've just done some work experience this morning, haven't you, at the cafe?
Today, yeah.
And from my experience, you are looking forward to that work each week. You can't wait to get there.
Yes.
So you're quite keen to work, aren't you?
Yes, from a work experience perspective. But as for next year, 2024, I'd love for that work experience to actually turn it into a pay work as a job one day, as in still having around in the kitchen. But there's another thing that I love to do is basically waitering, but it's more as in delivering food or drinks or both to the customers at the table and not taking orders. But other than this, we might like but to explore
in,
next
in
year.
In addition as well, that cafe experience that you've had at working has inspired you to go off and join a TAFE course to do a cookery skill set, haven't you? And you're about to start that next week.
Yes, next week, and it's going to be for the next 4 weeks.
Yep.
And yeah, with just the experience of doing the actual course, we're hoping that to explore different opportunities in cooking, and if not cooking, there could maybe be some other opportunities.
As a result of doing your work experience, you've kind of found another direction for you to go besides your business.
Yeah, cool.
Paid employment, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. So that's going to lead me, that's a beautiful opportunity for me to go into the next question is, do people with disability always have that sort of entry-level job that doesn't have a lot of skills, or with that baby steps, can there be more?
If you're taking anything from baby steps, I think with baby steps, they could achieve a lot more. And if you write a few little things down of what you want to do in the future, you could achieve anything you want to do.
I think a lot of people with disability perhaps didn't get the academic qualifications that they might need to apply for certain jobs. So that's a bit of a restriction, I suppose. But because you're working really hard, you've found another pathway to get a qualification to get a job.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, that's right.
Yes, to get a job next year, yeah.
Yeah.
And I agree with you there, Charlotte. When I was living in the UK, I went to a special school. And I found, bearing in mind, this is going back a lot of years, that you weren't as well educated as the kids in the street. And I pictured my mum to go to mainstream school. And I found it hard. I found it really hard in the 60s and the 70s. But I left with the equivalent of 4A tall. Went and did the public service with the government for 20 years. My eyesight started deteriorating. And then I betrayed and looked at exactly what Sean was doing now, looking at different areas, what was she like, exploring. And that's what I did. I looked into doing legal work, doing a legal course, which is based at general level. And then before I knew it, we were doing a law degree.
And then
qualified as a lawyer.
In the 60s and 70s, that's a
yeah.
So you were your own advocate.
Yeah. I think the way Sean was doing it, she's exploring and she's very passionate and working with the public. We should also brought up really good skill of writing. You never know, Sean, it's getting down in your life, well, in your lifeline. You might change your career 2 or 3 times.
Yes, and it's doing lots of different things and finding that really switches you on, and sometimes it's not obvious what switches you on.
Exactly.
Until you try all those different things, like you found that in your career, I imagine. So giving opportunity for work, I think, and lots of varied areas, especially for people with disabilities, is key, because people want to follow their passion, but 8 out of 10 people don't know what their passion is, so that's not very helpful advice. You've got to try lots of different things and work out what you like doing and then match that to a...
Yeah, and if not got choice, then take baby steps. Explore what you want to do, what your passion is, take the baby steps.
It's true, isn't it?
Definitely.
I'm going to ask you a little bit more about your micro business. Why did you want to start your own small business?
I remember you were writing stories as a kid.
Yes.
You loved to write stories, and you loved The Lord of the Rings, and you started writing your own version of Before the Lord of the Rings, a very long story. And when you were a young teenager, you loved it.
Yeah.
And so when it came time to think about it, micro-enterprise?
So think of a micro-enterprise. Back when I was in year 12, actually, at my high school, it was when we came to that decision at the meeting for us, year 12, so what we wanted to do in the future. Actually, I'm going to become a writer because I'm really enjoying writing my story at the moment and just like to see where it goes in the future. And
That's cool. How did you feel the first time you saw your book in print?
Oh my God. Just like with everyone else, very surprised and happy and shocked and long from like it came out so perfect.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
I was there when the box of books arrived at home and you opened it up and had a smile beam on her face. She was just ecstatic.
Yes.
Wonderful. We all were,
weren't we? I got the book. I think it was like last year or something. Got the whole entire book collection of my very first book. Yes. I was just around last year in, I don't remember, like November or October, that sort of thing. And and just when my dad said, just literally,
You've written about a book about a cat called Phoebe that you like. You knew Phoebe in real life, but you wrote a story about Phoebe, didn't you?
Yes. That was the very first book that I did publish, actually. And with the Facebook, Creators World, I actually have my website, which is also called Creators World, and the link is actually inside my Facebook.
We will provide the link with the podcast, I reckon.
Yeah.
Now, my next question, and then I'm going to flip over to Rita about work in an employment setting, but how did you feel when you made your first sale?
My very first sale is...
How did it make you feel?
Yeah, it's definitely the same way that when I got my first sale, I was literally so happy and surprised to actually go to these markets, to go there to actually sell something that I did. I was just literally so happy.
It was very affirming, wasn't it? Because it opened up a whole new world of possibilities that you can just sit down and create something and then create an income from that.
The important thing, Charles, is that book is going to be around forever. When my granddaughter comes to my house, I've got a copy of your book. When I sit down and read the book with her, and then our three cats come and join us. I'm sure they like the story.
There you go.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, Jack and Kim.
Yeah, Rita's got a copy.
All three cats.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Now you need to do one for the dog people in the world.
Yeah, totally.
So, Rita, I've got a question for you, and this is something that we've talked about in the past, and it's about being in a working for someone else rather than running your own business. But the question comes up, do you have to tell your boss that you've got a disability?
Okay, I'm going to be wearing two hats today.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah. I've done a lawyer. I've done employment law. Legally, you don't have to disclose anything. Mm. From a personal level, I definitely would disclose my disability. I think it would be blatantly obvious if I walked in with a guide dog. Yeah, so I think if you're open, frank, and you sit down and explain how, it's not how your disability affects you, but it's what support you need to do the job.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, can, you know, the labelling and specialist software. But if I didn't tell my employees that I had a vision impairment, how will they know what support to put in for me? If I also were hearing, if I didn't tell them about my hearing impairment, how would they know that I needed support with note-taking? I think that's the honest and just have that frank conversation. And if they take your disability into account and you don't get the job, then they're not worthy of your skills.
Because you've had a funny experience, haven't you, with a job interview?
Yeah, I have.
Do you want to, you feel comfortable to share?
Yeah, sure. When I came back to Australia, probably about 8 years, 9 years, I had my old guard job with me already, and I did a really good resume, got shortlisted, telephone interview, then got shortlisted again, and then went in to have my interview, and this was a city firm. I walked in with my guide dog, and there was a panel of three men. They all looked at the guide dog, didn't acknowledge me, and I said, "Shall I sit down?" "Oh yeah, okay, sit down." I sat down, I got the job settled, and then yeah, the interview started. So, how long have you had the job? I said, "Oh yeah, 2 years." And is it a retriever? Well, actually, I'm here to be interviewed for the job. I was polite about it. And then one of the other panelists said, "Isn't she beautiful? Isn't she beautiful?" I said, "You know what? I'm not bad for my age." And I was so annoyed. I just got up and walked off the interview. Needless to say, I didn't get the job. But yeah, it was just... it wasn't nice at the time, but now I can look back and laugh at it. And anyway, when I walked out, within the hour, I got offered another job.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was meant to be.
Yeah. So I've got a question. Yeah, I have so many things I want to say about that, but none of them are fit to print. I've got a question for the three of you, because you guys have all experienced job interviews in the process in a whole bunch of different ways. What is something that potential employers could do to just make it that bit easier for recruitment or to get a job for people with a disability?
I think for me, please step in. I've had, you can disclose your disability on the application form. And you don't have, but I would have a reasonable adjustment.
Yeah.
So, example, if I have to, for a job interview, you might have to sit a test.
Yeah.
Therefore, I'd ask for reasonable adjustment to make sure that the room was well had access to the relevant stuff. Maybe there was a hearing aid loop, environmental, for me.
Yeah.
I know some people with intellectual disabilities like to have ED read questions or ED English. Everybody's different. Some people stay for an interview. Some people are so nervous, but it depends. What do you think, John?
That's a hard question. What were you asking again?
So what could employers do to make the recruitment or say the application process easier for people with disability? Because sometimes...
That's a good question.
Yeah. Like,
I'm not sure. I've got a quick answer to that.
That's okay.
I think what sprung to mind when you first said it was, if they could educate themselves on examples of people with disabilities that haven't been employed and how they've gone and what it took to make that successful, if that was part of their knowledge, I suppose, that would help. But again, how to get them to do that would be difficult.
Mm.
But that experience you just shared was just staggeringly bad.
Yeah.
And it sounds to you like you handled it really well. But yeah, I don't know. It's a very good question. Which...
Yeah,
I think, John, I remember a guy at the time who was autistic, well, who we think autistic. At the time I was working at Peter Milton Centre. And they did have the interview, but the person mother felt that there was no reason to adjust it. And she came to me for advice. Actually, I got involved as a legal advocate and rang up or telephoned up the potential employer, and I said, look, you could have done this better. In all honesty, they didn't, number one, they weren't aware of the person with disability who was autistic, and number two, they had no idea about regional adjustment. And I connected them to a dead provider, made sure that client of mine was connected to a dead provider. They're not perfect for everybody. And did some research, got in touch with the Autism Association, and they sent some information. And what happened was, they didn't have a structured interview when they sat down. It was a very informal meeting, and the person got the job.
Oh. If there was a person like in the organisation willing to do that, to be an advocate or to be a source of information about how to accommodate, perhaps that's what they can do, is to have a dedicated person.
Yeah. I've often wondered that. Does it always have to be you come in 15 minutes before, you get the questions, you go away, you write the notes, you come in, you answer the questions and you walk out? What does that really tell you about somebody's skills? Does it tell you about their ability to answer those four questions, or does it tell you about their experiences? So,
And there are advantages to employing a person with a disability. In terms of customised employment, because there are some real benefits. There might be some things in the business that are not getting done that need to be done. Or this person with a disability might be a brilliant lawyer.
Yep.
So it's worth...
Or a person who's known author of children's book.
Yeah.
Being a business owner has a lot of employability skills behind it, doesn't it? Do you think, Charlotte?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, cool. All right, guys, that takes the care of the questions around employment today. So I just want to say thank you so much for your insight. Sorry about the little technical difficulty. But, yeah, thank you so much for your input. And let's hope that we get some employers out there who are willing to think outside the box. Okay, see you next time on Unfiltered. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.